Coming up on show 756, Tesla's 3 billion miles driven on autopilot. Stick around and I'll tell you more. Plus on the show today, the VW ID.3 production starts once again while the Chinese EV startup Byton furloughs workers. The Porsche Taycan 4S is driven a very long way, and the Range Rover Evoque and the Land Rover Discovery both get plug sockets. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily, the edition for Wednesday, 22nd of April. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. Welcome to two new Patreon supporters. Well, one and a half, actually. First is Marty. Well, Marty Young is now an executive producer of the podcast, has been supporting me for a long time, and Marty is enjoying the podcast during this period of stay at home and lockdown, and the service that we're providing and keeping you in touch with the fantastic news about EVs every day. And he's now an executive producer. So Marty, thank you so much. And also someone who I can't find in the Patreon back end somewhere. I can't work this thing. All I've got is his email address. So I know him as S. Shade. I can't find his first name. So anyway, I'm going to have to email him and say, look, thank you for your support as a new producer. But what's your first name? But thank you for now, until I find out. S. Shade, whoever you are, you mystery superhero Patreon supporter, you. Thank you, S. Shade. Let's kick off with Volkswagen's ID.3. Coming back online, production starts tomorrow in Zwickau in Germany. After a month's break, they packed in on March the 20th because of the virus shutdown. Germany is kind of reopening gradually and gently and appropriately, and the plant in Zwickau is now opening up for ID.3 production once again today, says Inside EVs. The company was making over 100 ID.3s a day before coronavirus, and so thousands would have been produced already. And the latest news is clear about the planned market launch this summer. It's still happening. Frankly, there'd be no point to delaying anything, as there are customers who have placed their orders, and many of the first edition cars are produced already. There's, I think, 30,000 first edition either reservation holders or people at least in the queue, even if you haven't actually ordered the exact spec of the car. The only missing piece of the puzzle for VW is probably the software of the ID.3. As the company has told us multiple times, they say it will be ready. Now, the production process isn't going back into full swing. It'll start with about 30 to 50 cars a day, I hear. VW says vehicles built will be equipped with whatever version of the software suite is currently at the corresponding time of production, and prior to their delivery to customers in the summer, they will receive the latest software version. Subsequent to the market launch of the digital functions will then continue to be upgraded in regular increments in following months. That's good news. That is over-the-air updates. What they mean by updated in regular increments is what the rest of us call over-the-air updates. Fantastic news that they will continue to work on that software package on the ID.3. Jürgen Stackmann is the member of the board of management for Volkswagen at sales, marketing and after sales, and he put a video on Twitter, and fair play to him for directly addressing the software issue head on. Didn't dodge this one at all.
The expected sort of question is actually, what about the software? Because I know as experts that you have been questioning the software status. Now, the reality is all of the functions are available and are in the car. It's just the finishing touches that now need actually to get it refined in a way that Volkswagen wants to hand over the cars to you, because the first experience in the ID.3 first that you're getting should be a fantastic experience for the ID.3, getting better with each software update you're getting then actually during the life cycle of the car. But the first sort of the first throw that we do with our customers obviously needs to be to the standard of a Volkswagen and not a sort of a startup brand. So it will take a few weeks for our teams to get these finishing touches actually into the software. Experience is already great. Fun to drive, fun to look at. A car really actually that will make you really, really happy in the second half of this year. Can't wait to hand it over to you guys in summer.
And a nice little dig in there. You heard that right. You heard him saying that unlike startups, they have to make sure that the software is right from the day one. Nice little dig. Of course, VW and Tesla do get on very well. Herbert Diess and Elon have been on stage more than once. Actually, relations are friendly between the two companies, but I like that. He didn't mention, of course, any names. However, we heard it. Let's talk about a startup company. He could have been talking about this startup company for all we know. The electric vehicle startup Byton has had to put hundreds of their team in the US on furlough following layoffs in China last year and some planned pay cuts as well, as disruption caused by the virus threatened to derail the release of their first car, says the South China Morning Post. They say that Byton initiated the series of cost reduction measures this week amid efforts to put on track its main operations in Nanjing, where production of the M-Byte, the electric sport utility vehicle, is going to be based in Nanjing. More than 200 workers are affected by the temporary stoppage in the North American headquarters in Santa Clara, California, a research and development base focused on software design with about 450 staff there, so almost half being furloughed. The M-Byte was expected to initially release in mainland China, of course the world's biggest car market, later this year. That would then be followed by the car's commercial launch in the US and Europe in the second half of 2021. So over a year to go into the US and Europe get the Byton M-Byte SUV. A reminder, in case you need a reminder of what the M-Byte is, this is the one you'll have seen if you've seen pictures online with the giant screen that is the whole width of the car, from the driver's to the passenger's side, and mega high-tech. Nice-looking car as well. Interesting tech underneath it, with all the right things being done in terms of connectivity and thermal management of battery packs and good battery sizes and good range. We just wish them all the best, and hopefully they can get that car on the road. And then in second half of 2021, maybe even to the US and Europe as well, that'd be very, very nice. Looking forward to seeing more about the M-Byte. And more about the Porsche Taycan. Seems that there's daily news at the moment. Well, that's because Porsche have got some press cars in the hands of those big websites. And Dan at Autoblog, who has his little regular test route, by the way, that he takes all EVs that he tests on. So a mix of different driving styles and environments. The 2020 Porsche Taycan, the third one that we've heard. So there's the Turbo, there's the Turbo S, and now there's the 4S, the Taycan 4S. Well, he did his regular route for test driving cars, did 214 miles, and the car said there was 87 miles left. Now, obviously, it would be like, you know, if you're absolutely stating a range, you would start with 100% and you'd drive it till the car stopped and then put it on a tow truck and get it to a charger. However, if you believe the 87 miles left on the gasometer on the dashboard, and you kind of have to, really, that would add up to 300.5 miles. It's a 48% increase on the EPA official range. It's a 97.5-mile increase on the EPA range. So my question from someone probably about 3,000 miles away from where the EPA testing is done, why is it so wildly different? And don't consumers deserve to get more accurate things from these official bodies? Because if we want more people to buy EVs, we want them to have both an understanding of what range is, but also a realistic understanding. How can the official range be 200 and the real world be 300? Okay, it doesn't just back up any previous results. It underlines and makes it bold, you know what I mean? The Taycan, whether it's the Turbo or the 4S, exceeds the EPA range by various amounts. This is the one that exceeds it by the most, though. There was a story earlier in the week on the podcast where the reviewer didn't quite get 300, about 280, I think it was. But it's all ballpark, right? Well, the 4S actually has a bigger battery than it's meant to. Maybe not meant to, but it's got a bigger battery than it will have long term. The 4S is coming with the big Taycan battery. That's the 93.4 kilowatt hour option, which is standard on the Turbo models. The early 4S cars are going to come with a glass roof, the intelligent home charging solution, and the price, well, it's not cheap. It's $115,000. The true base 4S will come eventually with a smaller battery. That smaller battery is 79.2, but oh man, I wish they'd keep the 93.4 kilowatt hour battery in it. It won't be built for some time with the smaller battery, so we won't know the range, but we do know it'll have a normal steel roof, and it'll be just over $100,000. So it does make a big dent in the price as well. Interesting changes with the 4S. I don't know if you've seen the YouTube videos on the Porsche Taycan, and you know it's got two charge flaps either side on the side wings. One side is the CCS combo plug with the DC pins at the bottom, and the other one's just an AC socket. The Porsche Taycan that we've seen so far, you sort of run your finger underneath a little sensor and the door slides back magically. This one, being a cheaper car, hasn't got that. It's just got a good old-fashioned cap, like a push-release door that you would find on fossil cars' fuel flaps. Push it in, out it pops. You know, that's absolutely fine. This kind of technology has been used for many years, and it's fine. It works. We don't need these whiz-bang infrared sensors and then the charge port magically zooms away, because it's just more to break. But I'm sure if you're spending the kind of money that Porsche buyers spend, a little nice luxurious touch always goes down well. No fancy swipe with your finger on this. I'll pop a link in the show notes if you'd like to read more. It's a car that really interests me because it got hammered when the EPA range came out, of people going, my goodness, the efficiency is awful. Now the car is out there and getting in the hands of YouTube videos and also car reviewers, we're seeing more of a true picture come out. It's kind of bothered me, actually, the last couple of weeks about these Taycan stories that show actually it just goes a lot further than we originally were told by the official agency. And again, probably because I'm thousands of miles away from understanding. You know what I'll do? I will drop a line to my buddies over at Inside EVs and Tom Malogny, who is a writer there, and I'll get an understanding of how the EPA systems properly work and why it's so wildly different to the real world. Well, let's talk about Tesla and their head of AI, Andrej Kapathy, released a bunch of new data about Autopilot and its features in a new presentation. Well, sort of new presentation. According to Electrek, well, back in November 2018, after 4 years of autopilot, Tesla owners reached the first 1 billion miles driven on autopilot. Now, less than 2 years later, the fleet has added another 2 billion more. That's a total of 3 billion miles driven on autopilot. This information was released by Andrej Kapathy, Tesla's head of AI and computer vision, full title, in a presentation at the Scaled Machine Learning Conference. Now, that conference, don't worry, they didn't have some big conference, social distancing and all that. Yep, weren't breaking any rules. It was actually in February, but the video of the presentation has just been made available, and that's why it's made the news. Out of the 3 billion miles traveled on autopilot in the entire Tesla fleet, in case you were wondering, 1 billion of them, so a third of the miles, were driven on Navigate on Autopilot. Now, Navigate on Autopilot is the thing where it can pass slower cars and take off-ramp exits and change lanes. And no, we don't have that advanced kind of stuff here because European laws are a bit rubbish like that. I know Tesla are working hard with regulators to try and get the laws changed. But yeah, Tesla's over here are slightly handicapped compared to all the bells and whistles that you might get somewhere else. Here's some good news, by the way. Land Rover has revealed a new plug-in hybrid powertrain. And we know now the first two cars that they'll be going in, but I'm sure it'll be going in many more. The new plug-in hybrid powertrain will go in the Range Rover Evoque. That's a nice car. And the Land Rover Discovery Sport. Both of these models have been completely redesigned over the last 2 years, but have only been available with four-cylinder petrol and stinky diesel engines. According to evo.co.uk, the new powertrain has a 197 horsepower turbocharged three-cylinder petrol engine. And this is interesting. We're seeing a lot of plug-in hybrids now coming with three-cylinder engines, and a few people online saying not as smooth as a four-cylinder engine, but the efficiencies of a three-cylinder engine as well, bit of weight saving, the electric motor will back it up when it can, 108 brake horsepower electric motor. On the rear axle, the new plug-in versions of the Range Rover and Land Rovers are, surprise, surprise, the most powerful versions they sell. It's also the fastest versions they sell. It's because electric cars are just better. I keep telling you this. I know. You're a convert. You and I think the same. It's the fastest. The Range Rover Evoque, by the way, does 0 to 62 in 6.4 seconds if you get the plug-in hybrid version. The Land Rover Discovery Sport, the mechanically linked all-wheel drive system found in most variants, by the way, is slightly changed because the power units only affect the relevant axles. No mechanical connection between the axles. And again, when you are controlling an electric motor with some clever software stuff, of course it can react thousands of times a second, much quicker than mechanical four-wheel drive. Do some funky torque vectoring in some cars as well to make stability and traction control and especially off-roading as well so much better. Well, the battery size of these plug-in hybrids, 15 kilowatt hours. That's okay. 41 miles, they say. Probably less, about 30, I imagine, real world when it's cold, on pure electric power. And 84 miles an hour is the top speed on your battery power. But that's great because, actually, those kind of cars can really, really make do with some brilliant electric power, especially the off-roaders. And, you know, even if you never do take your Range Rover or Land Rover off-road, it's certainly good to be doing some emission-free miles. In this month's issue of Top Gear magazine, they say they're celebrating the best electrified cars the world has on offer. They say, for instance, like the new Koenigsegg, with the three electric motors that produce over 1,000 horsepower extra. On top of the motor that's in there, what a kind of hybrid that is. This month, they've picked out the 10 best EVs in the world, and they're rating every single EV on sale. And it's awesome that a mag like Top Gear will do the electric issue. You know, I know I'm stating the bleeding obvious here, but there are 12 issues a year for monthly magazines. That means you've got 12 opportunities to make money, because the front cover of a car magazine is where they make their money. You're in the supermarket, the newsagent, you see a whole stack of them on the shelf. I mean, you're probably not at the minute, but anyway, people aren't doing too much shopping. It's the front cover that will attract you, unless you're a subscriber and a regular reader, on which one to buy. And so making the electric issue for one of their 12 this year, that's a big deal, by the way. I used to work for a company that had a big, big car magazine. I actually used to work for the company that makes a car magazine, literally called Car Magazine. And I know how important a front cover is. Kona has done well. The Kona Electric was the best small family car in the Top Gear Electric Awards. They loved the range on it. Top Gear drove it 1,000 miles over 9 countries and loved it. The Renault Zoe is the best super mini. And I can't find any more because I haven't gone to buy the magazine and I can't find the rest of the list online. So I'll have to go do that when I'm doing my shopping this weekend, the one trip out of the house. I'll see if I can find Top Gear on the shelves. Moving on to Mercedes-Benz, they have pulled the plug on hydrogen. Mercedes-Benz has pulled the plug on the hydrogen fuel cell version of the GLC. It used to be called the GLC F-Cell. I say used to be because it is no longer. Back in 2017, by the way, it arrived with much fanfare, and it was meant to be handing over to customers and officially available to order for everyone this spring. Last spring, actually, 2019. It says Inside EVs, some example. They did make some. They sold some hydrogen cars to Germany's national organization, Hydrogen, called NOW, and HQ Mobility. And several regional ministries took them as well, probably being told that they were the future. The goal was for it to be leased to people in cities. The goal was to have a hydrogen fueling station infrastructure built. Yeah, that is always the goal with hydrogen. Of course, it's a massive pipe dream for personal transport. And it's interesting, actually. I didn't tell you about this on the podcast earlier in the week, but I saw a related story. It was interesting, but I didn't. Maybe I'll report it tomorrow. It was Volvo and Daimler Trucks joining up to work on fuel cell trucks, because this makes sense. If you've got a big truck depot, or maybe boats, maybe shipping, maybe even aircraft, and you've got these fixed points where you can put hydrogen infrastructure, it makes a lot of sense. individuals carrying around their own supply of hydrogen in the way that we've carried around fossil fuels for over 100 years in personal transport makes no sense at all. It simply swaps one model for another model that is exactly the same. It doesn't move on with the times. The times being, we can all put solar panels on our roof, where there's more solar and wind and hydropower than there ever has been. There will be more in coming years. And so why do we have to go through all the faff of creating hydrogen only for it to be used as an onboard power source, which then charges, and many people forget, which then charges a battery inside the car, which then makes it move? All hydrogen cars are EVs. They just carry the power source with them. But for personal transport, makes no sense at all. For large, heavy, industrial machines, they make a pretty good case for it, actually. It's not cut and dry, but I can see both sides of that one. But when it comes to personal cars, Mercedes, well, they've thrown in the towel. Finishing off with a big story coming out of Seoul today. South Korea's capital, Seoul, are actually going to purchase 700 all-electric taxis. The subsidy is worth about $15,000 per car, and it's far more than the current subsidy for buying a car for personal use. Seoul is making foreign manufacturers, not only the Korean brands, eligible as well, says Clean Technica. And taxi companies in Seoul can now choose from 19 different cars from 7 manufacturers. Taxi companies can pick Model S's, Model 3's, I-Paces, Leafs. And the city notes that the high mileage taxis will do way more for air quality than a personal domestic car. That's what I've been saying. So, and I didn't think of this, by the way. I stole this because the first time I heard this, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. We must get working vehicles, the kind of cars that will do 500,000 or 1 million miles in their lifetime, over to EV before someone who drives their car a few miles a day, because these cars disproportionately kick out more pollution than cars owned by people like you and I. Let's get on to question of the week. And I'm asking, do you prefer new or used EVs? And why, if you're buying? Tell me. My email address is hello@evnewsdaily.com. You can leave a message on the YouTube show. Well, thank you to 237 patrons of the podcast. Thanks to you, we get to do this. And I never, ever take it for granted that money arrives every month from people who just want to support the move to EVs, and that is enormously gratefully received. My premium partners, I love to mention them every day: Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Avid Technology, Brightsmith for Clean Tech Talent, Porsche of The Village, Cincinnati, and Audi of Cincinnati East. Well, if you want to get any of the previous shows, there's 755 of them in the archive, and if you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, it does help me grow the show. Have a wonderful day. I'll catch you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.